What's up, Oos? Main Event Jey Uso here from the WWE. When it's just me between matches, it's day one-ish. And that means it's Chumba time. With hundreds of casino-style games and new titles arriving weekly, there's always something fresh to try at Chumba Casino. The daily boosts make it even more fun. And have me, about to get them, all during my downtime. Ready for a fun way to chill out and enjoy a few minutes for yourself? Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See T's and C's. 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
And a good Monday morning to you, and welcome into Darren, Donick, and Chase here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Hope everybody had a great weekend. Man, it was awesome on Saturday. Yesterday, not so much. Bad weather throughout the day, and even more bad weather south of us in the Chattanooga area. And so we're thinking about those folks down there. I saw Chris Dortch put on Facebook pretty late. It was after midnight last night that a tornado had just rolled, I guess, through his neighborhood or over the top of his house. It sounded like everything was okay. He is, of course, with Blue Ribbon College Basketball. And so bad storms in the Chattanooga area. So we're thinking about those folks down there. Darren McFarland, that's me here on the south side of town in Rutherford County. In Smyrna, Willie Donick over in East Nashville, Chase McCabe in Bellevue on the west side.
West
Guys,
side.
How you doing?
East side.
I love it.
What's and up, guys?
Elijah Campbell is back in the saddle at our Wholesale Link Game Studios, powered by RumbleOn.com.
Back in the show.
He nice is. To be back.
Back to the show.
Yeah. Back to back the show, to- literally.
Back to the show.
Spend some time in the minors.
Yeah. That life down there is not great, is it?
Oh, no. Yeah, definitely a lot less pay down there in the minors.
Yeah.
Not as glorious.
How's the travel?
Oh, rough.
Bus
yeah.
rides?
The bus, yeah. Sitting with Michael Jordan.
About meal
it's
money.
Rough.
How's that meal money? How's the dollar menu at McDonald's look like?
Oh, it's like those sandwiches they gave minor leaguers in spring training this year that they reportedly gave them that were next to
Man,
nothing.
I can speak firsthand. I remember spring training in the minor league clubhouse, the quote-unquote spread. It was a huge tub of soup, chicken soup. This is like 90-degree heat in Florida, right? That's just what you want at lunchtime,
sure.
A nice hot bowl of soup. And then big loaves of white bread with either PB&J or PB&J. Those are your choices.
That is a good
Or you
spread.
Could just go straight PB or straight J, if that's what you wanted. Those are your, you had options there.
It's like three different things you could choose from. That's almost the whole
yeah,
menu.
You had three different things.
That sounds like Panera Bread, actually.
Yeah,
were
you, and then,
were they serving Panera
and
Bread?
In the season, and then in the season, you really had choices. You could go to any restaurant you wanted. You had $15 a day to eat.
Wow.
I went
that's
to my coach
the
one
life.
Time, and I said, all right, you tell me. You're a smart guy. You tell me how I break up my $15 and get three good meals. And he was like, you could go to the grocery store. I was like, well, we don't have a car. Okay, we're living in a house. You know, we're in a hotel.
Was your
you know,
coach
it's not
Martin
like the, you know, these huge grocery stores are in these towns right next to us. I mean, it was brutal.
Was your coach Martin Erat? That's what he sounded like.
We did have an awesome pitching coach named Hal Dyer that was great at walking. He knew how to work it. We would go into a big place, a pizza joint like Pizza Hut, where it was a buffet or something, and he would say, all right, I got a whole team of guys here. If you'll give, you know, will you give us a deal? Will you give us 10% off? Will you give us free drinks? And if they said no, he would take that whole team and walk across the street to, a different pizza, shop or whatever. And so, as soon as we'd be walking out the door, the guy at pizza would go, whoa. All right, we'll give you free drinks. Because he goes, see, this guy's a smart businessman. Because he knew, 35 guys, or 30 guys on the traveling team, that would be good money. So, good business sense. That saved us a couple extra bucks. Came in handy.
Wow. Yeah, that's not good whenever your coach has no clue what to tell you. That's not good. Not good. Speaking of not good, did you guys see the story on Tavarius Jackson?
Yeah.
Sad. Did you guys know he was the quarterback coach at TSU?
I did not. I saw that, and then I was like, you know, shame on me for not knowing that. Apparently, he took that job in 2019. And you know, it could have been that I glanced over it and just didn't realize it, didn't put the two together. But, yeah, I saw that this morning right before Ryan and I went on for the rundown that he had passed away in a car accident last night in Alabama. So just really, really sad, to especially with everything going on. 36 years old, I believe. So, and
yes.
had been out of the league for, you know, a few years, and obviously was coaching, like we were just saying, but really sad stuff.
I don't know how many people did know that in this town, quite honestly, that aren't affiliated with the program.
He played in the league for 10 years.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, had a couple of stints as a starter, but mainly a backup with Seattle, Buffalo, and Minnesota, I believe. So, you know, did last for a while in the league as a backup.
Last night, I guess, close to 9 o'clock
ring.
Last night. Yeah. Yeah. In Montgomery, Alabama. Mm. Or I guess he was 7 miles south of Montgomery, Alabama,
and where he's from. They were getting, you know, rain and a lot of the weather that we got throughout the day. So I don't know if that was a factor or what exactly happened. But thoughts and prayers go out to his family and then, you know, his TSU family.
Mm. Golly. Yep. Struck a tree and then overturned. So I went to Alabama State. Just sad story. And I saw Russell Wilson tweeting out about that too. Yeah, a lot of people don't remember that he actually played in the league for 10 years. And like I said, I'm not so sure how many people knew that he was the quarterback's coach here in town, which, wow, that took me back. I was like, what? Interesting. Let's talk about our bracket as we get this thing close to completion this week. Where are we? What do we have going on today?
Well, we are setting the other half of the Final Four. On Friday, you had votes to end the Elite Eight with Steve McNair defeating Roman Yossi 53.8% to 46.2%. That was closer than people thought it
that
would
was, it, and not only was it close, Chase, that was the highest voter turnout of any bracket. That was a really nice thing to see. How many people voted?
Well, and I can tell you
why.
Right,
but Roman Yossi, he got, what, like 46%?
He did, and earlier in the day, Steve McNair had a pretty good lead, but Roman's team, the Nashville Predators, went to bat for him, and they helped him out on social media, so I think that helped with the Predators getting involved to try and get him some of the votes. So he got it close, but wasn't quite good enough, as Steve McNair will advance to the Final Four. And then Shea Weber, former captain, defeats Frank Wycheck 66.7% to 33.3%. So Shea Weber, Steve McNair move to the Final Four. And then for today's voting that we opened up about an hour or so ago, this will determine the other side of the bracket for the Final Four. Right now, Eddie George leads Mookie Betts 85.1% to 14.9%, and Pecorine leads his teammate Philip Forsberg 88.5% to 11.5%. Mm.
Peck is going to have to go through a couple of current teammates to get into the Final Four. Well, Shea Weber, boy. If anybody questioned how people felt about Shea Weber and his time here, he's going to have his hands full. I don't know where it's going.
Yeah.
One versus two. But man, golly. Shea Weber has done quite well. I think it's going to be chalk the rest of the way. Well, I mean, at least today. I think Pekka and Eddie will take care of business, so both one seeds will probably advance. And wow, what a Final Four. Eddie George versus Pecorine and Steve McNair versus Shea Weber. Whew.
I am very intrigued by those matchups. Very
yes.
intrigued. Because you're going to have, I mean, you have obviously one current star for the Predators in Pecorine. Shea Weber still prominent in the league, albeit not here anymore. And then, of course, the two greatest players to don a Titans uniform since their time in Nashville. So I am very, very curious to see where the vote goes. If it's more of a, you know, live, you know, the past of those two legends, or the present with Pecorine and Shea Weber. I'm very, very curious.
So go to thegamenashville.com to vote. It's easy, especially now that we've got the bracket down to this. You just need to apply two votes today. You can get in and get out in 10 seconds and cast your vote. So let's cast those votes, and let's get this thing down to our final four, also on our Twitter, at 1025 The Game. Boy, it's going to be good today. Eddie George versus Mookie Betts. We had a great conversation with Mookie Betts last week on the show, Pecorine versus his teammate, Philip Forsberg. So that's today's voting. Get in there, vote early, and vote often, just like you did on Friday. We had a good turnout at the polls on Friday. We would like to do the same again today. And we come back, Adam Vingan from The Athletic will tell you what he's been up to and writing about. Talk about some hockey news on the other side. Darren Donican, Chase, ESPN 102.5 The Game. Trent Davenport will join us to kick off the second hour of the program with the draft just around the corner. We'll talk with TD in the next hour. Also, This Is What I Know, we'll head east at noon. Also, throw in a little wrinkle with our Vols coverage today in the third hour of the program. Adam Vingan from The Athletic is on the line with us. Adam, what's going on?
Hey, guys. How are you?
Where do you think this is going? As all the leagues are trying to figure out how to get back on their playing surface, where do you think this is going on the hockey side?
It's really hard to say. And Matt Duchene did a conference call with local reporters last week, and I thought he was pretty upfront about where this is going, at least as much as he could be. We're all speculating at this point. But he said that he can't envision a scenario where if the league comes back, fans will be allowed in the building. I think if there is hockey this season, we have seen the last of hockey with spectators in the building. And I know that you've had Elliot Freeman on multiple times, as you do every week, and you know he has mentioned and reported recently the idea of neutral sites, perhaps. He mentioned North Dakota. There's been a report about Manchester, New Hampshire. You know, low densely populated areas where this could happen. But it just seems incredibly early to speculate. I think we've talked about this before, but I have a hard time imagining this season going deep into the summer if the NHL's intention, first and foremost, is to make sure that next season isn't disrupted because of what happened with the coronavirus pandemic. So I wonder internally if the NHL has a drop-dead date, so to speak, where Gary Bettman, Bill Daly, whomever makes the decision, says, if we don't feel we can get this league back up by X date, then we're just going to call it. And I wonder if that date, you know, is sooner rather than later. I mean, so I remember having a conversation with Robbie Stanley where I thought Memorial Day might be a good barometer. If businesses are still closed, if we're still social distancing, if the curve hasn't been flattened by Memorial Day, which is the last weekend in May, so about 6 weeks from now, I'm not sure what the league is going to do. But I'm trying to stay as cautiously optimistic as I can. But I'm taking more of the glass half empty scenario. I have a very hard time imagining we're going to see competitive sports again this season.
Okay. You put something up on The Athletic early this morning.
Preddies.
A salute to the best and worst of the Predators season. Before I go any further, what was the premise of this? Tell everybody who's listening about the article and a little backdrop on it, and then we'll go from there.
Well, as most of you listening, I'm bored out of my mind right now. So I needed to find a way to entertain myself as I'm quarantined. So I decided to create a Predators award show, sort of. I called it the Preddies because I couldn't think of anything else. It's not the most creative title, but it works for the purpose of the article. And basically, I just handed out end-of-season awards to players and games. So it's not just players. I also picked the best game, the worst game, the best goal, you know, things of that nature, best takedown, best bromance, which I have titled the PK and Tony Best Bromance Award. after PK Subban and Anthony Boteto. So I just decided to have a little fun with it and just give some fictitious awards to the Predators if the season does not resume.
Okay, so this was you. This is not you doing votes or anything with your, you know, your readers.
This is just you.
Okay.
That's me.
Let me just start with the worst game. You have the Winter Classic deemed as the worst game. Before I ask you why, I guess when you think about the month of November and, you know, I guess, let's see, the game in Colorado, the game at home here against Chicago, the power play goals against Vancouver, and the nightmare that was that. How did you come up with the Winter Classic being the worst game in your mind?
And those games you mentioned, Darren, were games I considered, especially that game in Colorado where they lost 9-4. And I also thought about the game at home against Vancouver, in which they allowed five power play goals. But I landed on the Winter Classic just because of the scale of the game itself. You know, it was the league's marquee outdoor event. 20,000 Predators fans came to Dallas and had a great showing at Cotton Bowl Stadium. We heard it. We saw it. We were all there. And the Predators, as I wrote in the story, pretty much embarrassed themselves in the second and third periods of that game. I also just look back at, you know, also I included the fact that Ryan Ellis was concussed in that game and missed 20 games, which was a huge loss as well. And I just go back to being in that dressing room after the game. And I thought about, and I included the quote from Pecorine. It was a longer quote, but I included the juiciest part when he said, quote unquote, "We're in trouble right now." I just thought that we had seen the Predators struggle those of us around the team every day, like the four of us, we had seen the Predators struggle all season long. But this game, the Winter Classic, their deficiencies were exposed to an international viewing audience. And there was no way that those issues could be ignored any longer. And then 5 days later, Peter Laviolette was fired. So I just think when you look at the scale of the game, how important it was for the franchise and an opportunity to be the only game on New Year's Day at Cotton Bowl Stadium, the first Southern-based Winter Classic, there was a lot of hoopla, a lot of excitement around that game, and the Predators laid an egg. So while the other games certainly were bad and worse on the scoreboard, I think when you consider everything that went into the Winter Classic, that was the worst game, in my opinion.
Talking to Adam Bingen from The Athletic. And Adam, it is interesting to, as we're in this pause, there's been a lot of reflection on a lot of different things. But, you know, those are the thoughts that run through my mind. As you mentioned, there were several really frustrating individual games during the whatever it was that they played, 70 games. And at the same time, you know, we're having all these replays on our station, plus on Fox Sports Tennessee. And, of course, you see what the team looks like in their best moments. Ironically, they are, you know, not coincidentally, they're undefeated in these replay games. But it does show you the ebb and flow of a season, you know, when you skip around the different chapters. But I thought it was an interesting piece that you put together. One of the things that jumped out to me, and I had noticed it too, was just how great Juuse Saros was after John Hines took control, or has been since John Hines took control. That's really been the stabilizing force of the season.
Yeah, absolutely. When you look at the Predators' improved record, you can pretty much point to goaltending as the main reason why. And as you mentioned, Willie, as it says in the story, since John Hines was hired as coach on January 7th, up until the time of the pause, which was March 12th, Juuse Saros had a 12-5-0 record, a .213 goals against average, and a .935 save percentage in 19 appearances. And then, according to my friends at SportLogic, Juuse's 17.6 goals saved above 17.6 goals saved above expectation in all situations in that 2 month span were second only to Vezina Trophy favorite Connor Hellebuck of the Winnipeg Jets. So, I mean, both goaltenders deserve credit for that, but Juuse Saros in particular. I thought the most intriguing storyline down the stretch, and it was the story I wrote after the game in Montreal, which ended up being the Predators' last game of this season, potentially. The headline was, Juuse Saros is the new normal. I thought the most intriguing storyline down the stretch for the Predators before the season paused was what the workload was going to look like for the goaltenders, and the distinct possibility that if the Predators made the playoffs, UC Saros would start game one against whomever the Predators were going to play. And we had been talking about possibly the transition of from Pekka to UC Saros coming to fruition this season. I think if UC Saros would have started game one of the postseason, that would have solidified it. So the fact that we were perhaps robbed of that opportunity certainly was a storyline that I was really looking forward to.
Yeah, we do wonder what the roles of UC Saros and Pekka Rinne will be when everything resumes. I think you know where it's going to start. At least you know where it should start, even though everybody is going to be starting from square one, which brings me to my next question, Adam, for you. Pierre LeBrun had a good detailed article in The Athletic, and he talked about something that I think is worth kicking around if you're a player, for sure, and that is when you resume the season. I mean, we know it's not going to be anytime soon. It may be another couple more months after we've already been paused for a month. So let's say you're off for 3 months, optimistically, maybe even longer, and they're going to play. Wouldn't it make sense to play a couple exhibition games before you actually play this high-stakes hockey that eventually you're going to get to pretty quick?
I think that's certainly a good idea, and we've heard players on these conference calls at the NHL facilitated over the past couple weeks say similar things. Matt Duchene last week said he feels that each team needs at least 3 weeks from the time that team facilities open to the time that they're playing games. And whether that means exhibition/preseason-like games or starting the playoffs, you know, that's at least, they think they need at least a three-week time frame from when they're allowed to go back to the rink in order to be prepared. You know, the one thing that I've always thought about with the playoffs, with the resumption of the NHL season, my idea has always been that the fewer teams you have involved coming back, the better. For example, there's absolutely no reason for the Detroit Red Wings to come back. They're awful. You know, why are these players going to want to, you know, be sitting down, you know, for 3 or 4 months, not training, then have to ramp it up to play 2 or 3 meaningless games for them, at least? You know, I think that the fewer teams they bring back, the better, which is why I think they should start right from the postseason, go right into the playoffs. And maybe they play exhibition games among the teams that are going to make the playoffs. Maybe they can do some cross-conference games. So they're not playing teams they could potentially play in the first few rounds of the playoffs. But I think the fewer teams that come back, the better. So let's just say they expand the playoff format from 16 teams to 20 teams. The other 11 teams that don't make the playoffs, they don't come back. Their offseason starts. They just continue doing what they were doing. Maybe they can start their offseason training, but they're not coming back. They're not getting ramped up to play games. So I think that I've always been of the mind that the fewer teams that return to the NHL, if this season returns, the better in terms of the logistics of how it would work.
And one thing we know, there's plenty of time to kick around different ideas and brainstorm about logistics on how to do this. I know I've done it for, you know, sitting at my office in front of a computer, thinking about what the best way is. So I can imagine what it's like as everybody throws their ideas in there to the league office. One more question for me, Adam, before I turn it over to Chase, and that is, have you seen any uptick in Darren's meme game since you put him on the list the last time you were on the show? I feel like you really challenged him. I feel like Darren has responded to the challenge.
Well, my challenge was for him to stop doing them completely, not to make them bet.
But you knew that was not in the cards. You knew that was not going to happen.
Yes, I knew that was not going to happen, but I do enjoy the brain teasers. At least if Darren is going to tweet things that, you know, that cater to my intelligence, not dumb it down.
Darren,
I appreciate the brain teasers.
Well, he is not, I guess, I'm glad that he appreciates them, but we as a show would appreciate it if he would get involved. He has not yet answered one of them. I mean, your colleague,
wow,
John Glennon, nailed one last week.
One.
The toughest one last week he nailed on the first guess. And honestly, he was one of the few people. There were hundreds and hundreds of entries, and he was one of the few that nailed it on the first try.
All right. I will get involved this week, I promise.
Okay, we got a new one. We got a fresh one out there right now.
One was just hit. Yeah. Send was just hit as you were talking about it.
I love the prize.
I'm glad
you
were paying attention to
this. This is a great prize.
I'm really glad about that.
This is a prize that I don't think it's Adam really prize. has a feel for, because I think he got here a little too late. But
yeah,
I mean, this is a tremendous place to have a meal.
I used to go there all the time.
Oh man, oh man, was that place good?
So anybody who you're saying that the winner gets dinner for two at a restaurant that no longer exists.
He's a smart guy, that Adam.
Adam,
he's
a I didn't very say smart that at man. All. Okay, you said that. I didn't say that.
Adam,
where's the incentive in that?
It's all.
Hey, Adam, trust us. Trust this show. It's a great place. You'll get it. It's a great place.
I'll never get to eat it because it's closed.
Let me in, Adam. So here's my thing with everything that we've been discussing. Whenever the Predators have some sort of pause, whether it's the All-Star break or the week off or, you know, combination of the two or just, you know, a long period of time in between games, I tend to get worried with this team because historically with this group, they're slow out of the gate. They can't respond. So I know every team is faced with this. Nobody has an advantage, but is that any type of concern that whenever they get back to playing, whether it's, you know, resuming the regular season or going straight into the playoffs, whatever the case may be, do you have that kind of concern with this team?
That's a good question. I guess I really haven't thought about it too much just because, as you said, Chase, every team is going to be in the same position. You know, they're all going to be potentially coming back after a multi-month layoff. But you're right. You know, I think of the way that they were playing leading into the Christmas break when they went on that four-game road trip, went 3-0-1, you know, won that exciting overtime game in Boston, you know, dominated the New York Islanders at Nassau Coliseum, and then they come back from the Christmas break and lay two eggs against the Pittsburgh Penguins in back-to-back games before losing in the Winter Classic. That is certainly something the Predators have shown in the past not to be great. You know, they're not great at coming off of an extended layoff, but I just wonder, because every team is going to be in the same position, that will be mitigated. But certainly something to think about if we get to that point, which I hope is soon, because as you can see from my story, I'm running out of things I'm running out of creative juices here. Fast.
Yeah. Well, yeah, look, we all know how that goes. And along those lines, you know, I think goaltending, you know, is something that, you know, that you had in your article with UC Saros and his breakout year, Pecorine, it's been more up and down. Do you think that the break helps or benefits those two?
That's a good question. I wonder if it helps one and hurts the other. I mean, I bet it would be great for Pecorine in terms of being able to clear his head and come back to the team and with a fresh state of mind after a struggle in the second half of the season. And I wonder if the momentum that UC Saros was gaining through most of the second half of the season will have been halted by the break. But we were talking about this a little bit before, but I think that, you know, I there are some things you're going to have to start from scratch about, but if the team does come back, I go right back to UC Saros. I mean, he was proving before the break and starting 15 of the 21 games before the pause that he was among the best goaltenders in the league and really helping the Predators get into a playoff spot. So even though we might be 3 or 4 months removed from that by the time the season starts up again, if it does start up again, I would go right back to UC Saros.
Adam, before we let you go, I have to ask you a wrestling question, because I know you probably tuned in to WrestleMania weekend. WWE is going to resume their live shows from the Performance Center. Even after there was a reported case of COVID-19, of somebody testing positive for it, what have been your thoughts on how WWE has handled all of this?
Well, certainly I think, you know, they're doing those of us who are wrestling fans a service by giving us fresh content when the rest of the sports world has been shuttered. But certainly you have to wonder how long they were going to be able to do that before, as you said, reportedly someone tested positive for coronavirus. I think they've done a good job on the fly of making it a made for TV event in terms of how they're able to shoot it without having a crowd. I wonder if some of the other sports will take cues from them if they come back. Let's say the Stanley Cup playoffs are conducted without fans. Perhaps they'll learn from what WWE and AEW have done in terms of how to set the cameras, how to, you know, what angles to shoot from, all of those things. So, you know, I've been happy that they've been providing me with new content every week as they normally do, but, you know, they're out there on an island. I mean, they're the only sports entertainment product that's occurring right now. So eventually, I'm sure they might succumb to some pressure, but we'll see.
All right, get that brain working. We'll see what you got. Thanks for joining us.
All right, guys. I will do that.
Adam Vingan from The Athletic. That's where you can find his work, and we do appreciate him joining us. We will come back with more of Darren, Donick, and Chase next. Coming up at 11 o'clock here on this Monday, back here on Darren, Donick, and Chase, I have tweeted out the latest installment of our Monday brain teaser. Want to get the brains moving. Let's get them active. We were, especially after yesterday, I mean, let's be honest, we were just a whole big pile of mush, all of us, doing absolutely nothing. So let's get things stimulated. Let's get things going. We've got a great prize attached to it. And it has been tweeted out, so give it a whirl. See what you got. A lot of guesses are coming in. And I don't think we recapped Fridays, right? I dropped the ball. I don't think I gave out the answer.
You dropped the ball, and during the break, Sawyer just dropped a bunch of eggs. So we've had that situation.
Some Easter eggs?
No, regular eggs.
Oh,
yeah, it was bad.
Not good.
No, it was
not good.
It was not good.
What was he doing carrying eggs?
Well, he wasn't. With the refrigerator opened, he's very big and bumbly, and he bumped into it, knocked the egg tray off, and just everywhere. Mass chaos all over the kitchen floor.
Ouch.
So, 18 eggs gone.
18 eggs.
18.
Sawyer, 18? Man, you are a troublemaker, yeah,
not
man.
Not one survived.
Golly.
But I got to be honest, Chase. You put 18 eggs out there on the firing line like that.
I don't know.
I mean, no, that was
That's a
thing.
Lot to like, lose.
They were in the door, and he bumped in. You know, he was running by and bumped into it, and it just made it fall right out. All over the floor.
He stormed the castle. He got inside the. He got in the house. He got in.
And then he has this look on his face like, what did I do? I don't even know what I did.
Did he immediately try to get rid of the evidence and just like eat all the eggs?
Yes, he did.
Oh, my gosh. Well, at least he'll be healthy.
That could be worse. That's going to be ugly.
Yeah, that could end poorly.
It's going to come back ugly. Yeah, but right now he's...
He's loving it right now.
Yeah, right now he's thinking this is a good idea.
This is working from home. This is 2020.
The reason I have switched it up is, look, the three of the five from last week, which are a lot of fun, and they make you work, and we got a lot of people weighing in, and they were tough, but once you figure out kind of the order of operations, and then once you've done three of them, and then you realize after we talk about them, you know, you've got to pay close attention to the last line or some of the lines, right? The doubling, you got the doubling going on. And so once you figure all that stuff out, I kind of just felt like it had run its course. You know, once you kind of understand, doesn't matter what the picture is, if you know what you're looking for, more times than not this week, if I were to do, because there's, like I said, there's hundreds of these in the same type of format of the three that we did last week, which are fun. But once you figure what you're looking for and how it works, and like I said, order of operations, I feel like we were going to start getting a ton of right answers. So I tried to mix it up a little bit. Was something different. Friday's answer, which did stump a lot of people, don't get me wrong, it was tough, but it was 26 on Friday. That's what we were looking for. The flower.
I thought
the
that was the toughest one
the
yet.
Clock.
That was the toughest one I had yet.
Mm-hmm.
I'll be honest. Today I hit it. Today I got. I honed
in. Is this
the
first one? Maybe you've nailed on the first one.
Yeah. Maybe two. Maybe I might have two. Might be two for six.
All right. Well, I mean, that's not a bad thing. I mean, most everybody, that's why I've made a big deal about Glennon, because that was definitely, if not the toughest, it was one of the toughest last week, and he was one of the few that nailed it on the first crack. It's hard to get it on the first crack. But, yeah, it had the double flower. The time was different on the clock, which messed on Friday's brain exercise, and the Caterpillar on the final line had the one extra dot. So you had to figure all that out. Once you did that, you were golden, but obviously there were a ton of misses. But that was my thinking and kind of changing up a little bit with today. I don't know how these are going to go over, Willie. Maybe they're too easy. You know, maybe I've got a great prize attached to something.
The answers are rolling in.
Yeah.
The answers are rolling in.
Mm-hmm.
Not all correct.
No.
Some correct.
No.
Some incorrect.
Yeah.
Lots incorrect.
I kind of wish people would not show how they did it on Twitter, because everybody can go look at this stuff. We're basically asking you to do this on the up and up, right, and not go cheat. And I don't know if everybody's doing that or not. I have no clue, but we can't control that. But it is nice. Mr. Smarty Pants, showed his entire work, and yeah, he nailed it. But then there are people that can go look at that and see that that's what he's doing. So anyway, so we thought we'd throw that out there, get involved. It's a lot of fun. So what did you guys make of our discussion with Adam? Fun little exercise, just kind of him putting together. I didn't really have, like I said, the only reason I kind of picked out the worst game is I don't know if I necessarily, I understand what he's
there
talking about.
Candidates.
Yeah, I mean, the Winter Classic, I don't know if it was the worst game. I mean, you know, I understand the stage and the magnitude that they were on, and, you know, it was the only game, and it was the Winter Classic, and, you know, I get it, a lot of eyeballs on them, but I don't know if I would deem that the worst game.
Well,
it was bad because Ryan Ellis went down and they lost him for 20 games, and they fell apart at the end of the second and third periods, but...
But I think that was also the final straw for Peter Laviolette.
And I
think that's why he looks at it.
Yeah,
as
I would
the worst
agree with
game.
That.
Because things were already rocky, and they're already, I mean, he was getting asked those questions, and a lot of times by Adam, he got asked that question at the end of that game by Adam. But I kind of feel like that was when and David Poyle said that. I mean, it was pretty much around then that the decision was made. To go ahead and part ways. So I don't know if them winning that game really changes anything. It might have delayed the inevitable, but I kind of think that that's one way, you know, you can look at that as the worst game, because that was pretty much it, and a change was needed.
Yeah, I
don't know, but if I had to bet, I do think there were some decisions made after that game. That was the final straw. Because if you remember, they went out to L.A. and won against a depleted, struggling Kings team at the time. Which, by the way, doesn't look as easy as it did back then. Because if you watch, the Kings have actually found a pretty good formula. They've been a pesky team, starting not long after that. And then, of course, they had a really awful two periods, just a debacle for two periods in Anaheim, but did rally to get the game to a shootout and very nearly stole the game the next night. And so I wonder what would have happened had they won both of those games. Would they have fired Peter Laviolette the day after? I don't know. But you did get the feeling that it was almost inevitable after the game against the Stars on New Year's Day.
Yeah, I would agree with that. Like I said, there were a lot of... November created, unfortunately, some worthy candidates, because November was not
there have
a
been
night.
Some eggs laid. Speaking of the eggs that have been laid all over Chase's place, thanks to his dog, they have laid a lot of eggs this year, for sure. We've talked about it, right? You've had some just really stinky feelings some days after games, and it's had some uncomfortable conversations on our show, you know, but that's part of the journey of a season. But it has been interesting that way, because they have usually bounced back. They had the one stretch in November where they went into the tank for a while. I think they went 1-6-2 or 0-6-2, right? 0-6-2 for a stretch in November. But other than that, they followed a stinker with a pretty good bounce back in a lot of cases.
Well, it was a lot of kind of like what we talked about with the 2016-2017 season, right? They just kind of were just going back and forth. Win one, lose one. Win two, lose two. It was like it was just the same all year, right? There was no like fall off the cliff. There was no riding a real high, right? I mean, it was just kind of the same all year, right? I mean, for the most part. I mean, it's hard over 82 games for it to look exactly the same, but wasn't that kind of the case in 16-17 where it was just kind of the same thing all year, just kind of up and down, up and down, up and down all year, finally at the very end get in and then get red hot?
Yeah, and you were wondering if the red hot was about to happen or would the pattern have continued? But I think Adam made a really interesting point. Let's just take the goalies, right? Because if you want to boil it down into one thing, we can talk about, you know, some of the individual stars that have not had great years, and that's been a huge theme, right? What's going on with Ryan Johansson? Why hasn't why hadn't so-and-so done as well? What has Duchesne really played as well as they hope? No. All of these things, right? But if you really boil it down, when UC Saros started to play at his best, and you go back to October, which was a pretty good month, Pekka was at his best, right? He started the season 8-0-2. When you get great goaltending, it erases all kinds of issues with your team. But now that you're hitting a reset button for, you know, multiple months, who knows what each goalie's going to look like, right? Who's to say that Pekka didn't come out and play great in his first couple of games and get on a roll, have brand new confidence that he didn't have maybe towards the end? And maybe UC Saros gets off to a slow start. Anything can happen, right?
Yep. No doubt. We'll come back and wrap up the first hour next. What do we think they're talking about? Then what do you think they believe is the best plan they have right now today? Obviously, we have no clue, but just your opinion. What do you think? Do you think they believe in that room that there's a realistic and a viable way to bring this back? And if so, what is it?
I think they have to, don't they? I mean, that has to
I
be
hope
the
so,
mindset.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah, like I, you know, Greg Wyshynski, we used some of the clips from him. He was on with Jared and the GM on Friday, and Ryan and I discussed this morning. He brought up the TV deal, you know, with the NHL, and that the TV deal isn't maybe as good as other sports, and so I think they want to get in the regular season. They want to finish the regular season. They want to have the playoffs because of that, because that's revenue. That's money. And so that's a big part of it. So I believe that everybody in that room that you bring up, on a Zoom call or however you want to look at it, they have to have that belief of that they, whatever plan they have, they're going to execute it and it's going to work.
And I think, too, it's becoming very evident. And I watch some of the news programs. There's just a lot that we need to keep finding out. And I think slowly we are finding some things out about the virus, right? You know, it goes so slow. We want all the answers today. But, you know, with each passing day, with each passing week, maybe you get a little clearer picture about what can be done. And, Darren, as you've said all along, right, at some point, you know, we know the social distancing is working, and that's a great thing, and we need to keep doing it for a while. But at some point, we need to get to another level. We start to get back. You know, state by, I don't think we should open the floodgates and let everybody go back to normal, but I think there's got to be a smart quarantine type of system, right? Where, okay, we think this group can go. We think this group's okay. We think this group needs to stay in isolation for a while, et cetera, right? So I think in another month or two, I'm hoping the picture will be clearer. And the key is for all these leagues to, when that day comes, you have your system all ready and brainstorm through, troubleshooting, all of that stuff, so you minimize the chance that you could have hiccups.
Well, let me just say this. If the picture's not clear in 2 months, They won't be coming back, not for this season.
Yeah,
I mean, if we don't have a clear picture in 2 months, then they're not coming back.
So, well, I've kind of had in my head. I don't know about you guys. I've kind of had in my head, you know, July 1st. You know, could you do some stuff? I mean, just for hockey, right? And even for baseball, I think, you know, July 1st, could you have a season that would be decent? You know, from July 1st until the end, with a couple of doubleheaders in there. I'm talking about with no fans, you know, probably. And then maybe for hockey, you know, some sort of 2 month, July, August, maybe even leak into September a little bit if you needed to. You know, would that be enough? You know, if you got 2 months in for hockey and basketball, I've kind of had it in my mind that maybe that's the time frame. But we'll see.
Well, I told
maybe
you
I'm too optimistic. I don't know.
Well, I don't think it's too optimistic. I mean, you're talking about July as we sit here in the middle of April. I told you my hairdresser had been letting me know that they are playing or they were planning on playing over in the, I guess it's the Chinese Professional Baseball League, that Taiwan was coming back. Well, evidently they have started back. I don't know if you guys have seen this. I saw where, I think it was the New York Post yesterday, I think, put out there, and she had actually texted me and said that, hey, just so you know, that they have come back, because I think it wasn't April 9th. I think April 9th they actually got rained out. It was the first, you know, can you imagine after all this? But so they did. They debuted the season yesterday. This is the Chinese Professional Baseball League. So they have started their regular season, and they debuted it yesterday. It was set to begin on March 14th. And then they moved it to Saturday was supposed to be the opener, but they got rained out on Saturday. And so they did start yesterday. It was played without fans. There were no fans in the stands. But they did have, I don't know if you guys saw this, she told me this, and I'm like, I don't understand. And then I went and I read the article, and she said that they had like cardboard cutouts and like robot fans, like, so they actually put stuff in the stands to make it look like there were people in the stands, which is pretty clever, right? It's pretty fun. But, you know, that's kind of where I'm at with all this is we're doing the right thing. We have to continue to do the right thing. But I also think that we need to be figuring out solutions to try to, you know, get back. We can't sit here in our houses forever. So we're going to have to figure out. And quite honestly, I hope out of this, I think you've heard me bring this up a couple of times because I've thought about it. I hope that just like all the startup leagues, right, that we've laughed at and mocked, and yeah, they didn't last. But you know what? The NFL or other leagues took some stuff from it and said, you know what? We kind of like that idea. We're going to take that and implement that ourselves. And things have come out of these startup leagues because they were willing to push the envelope, right? They were willing to do something totally different and probably at the time deemed crazy. And then it eventually made its way to, you know, whatever league was the league in that sport. And so we've seen that happen. And so what I'm getting at is I hope that happens here. I think I've brought up, you know, okay, so until we come up with vaccine, then maybe we're just going to have to wear a mask, right? That's just, that's going to be our new norm. And quite honestly, when I say what comes out of this, I don't understand why in the winter season, during flu season, which we know is going to happen every year, with a vaccine or without, whether you have the flu shot or what, the flu is out there. And we know that people lose their lives, as we've seen, because of coronavirus. You know, what the numbers look like that we rarely talk about, right? We don't really talk about flu deaths every year. We don't. And yet it's a big problem. So I've been thinking, you know, why don't we fly? We get on these tin cans. We get in a plane with 150 strangers during a sick season, a flu season, a time when people are hacking and coughing and everything. And we just sit in a, you know, we shut the door and we're in this can with wings for 2 hours. Well, why is that? Why do we think that's a good idea? How about, you know, like we force people. You fly during the flu season, you wear a mask. Everybody on a plane wears a mask. How about that? I mean, it may sound crazy at the time, but, you know, if it prevents people from catching the flu, which how many people you think get sick in the cold months from flying? People, especially people who travel all the time. Willie, you know better than us because you travel a lot more than us. And you know these things when it hits a team, what it's like when it goes through a team. Because guess what? They can't avoid each other. They have to get on planes and stuff. And so
yeah,
how many people...
The plane and the locker room are the two
yes.
things that you think about a lot. You know, I know over time they've really worked on trying to, you know, limit how things, how germs get spread. You know, but it's kind of unavoidable, you know, with a group like that. So it's a lot to think about. For sure. I think the next league to look at is South Korea. So later in our show, Tyler Kepner is going to join us from the New York Times at 1 o'clock. He did a extensive study on what's happening in the South Korean league, where there's some former major league players from the States here, and you know, some maybe future major league players who are South Korean. You think about you know, some of the guys that have come over here and played. So it's a pretty high level of baseball. And of course, it's a smaller country, but they have been lauded for their testing system worldwide, right? They've done a really good job. And so they hopefully are ready to get this thing going a little bit later in the month. And as you said, Darren, all of the leagues are going to be watching closely to see how it goes. So I'm impressed that Taiwan is going, if that's the case. I haven't read anything specifically on that. But that's, you know, that's a relatively smaller group of people playing on that island. There are some, in theory, a little bit easier to have the answers you're looking for. But either way, that's a positive thing.
Yep, we'll come back. Hour number two, we start with Teron Davenport. The NFL draft is just around the corner. We talk with TD next.
Bubba Wallace here from 2311 Racing. You know what's slower than a pace car? Waiting at the car wash. That's when I fire up Chumba Casino. It turns those slow minutes into fast fun. With new games every week, you'll never get bored. Next time you're stuck in the slow lane, speed up with Chumba. Play now at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.